From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump on Tuesday night took a moment during his State of the Union address to slam Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro and praise opposition leader Juan Guaido, who has declared himself interim president. The U.S. has made no secret about wanting regime change in Venezuela and has rallied several international allies to back Guaido against Maduro. Maduro continues to face a crisis inside Venezuela as a failing economy has prompted mass protests and led to an exodus of people leaving the country. But the top brass of the military have continued to support him, a critical element to remaining in power in Venezuela, if history is any guide. Meanwhile, Maduro also announced early elections for the National Assembly, hoping this will assuage his critics. We turn now to Roberto Lovato. He is a writer and journalist whose work has appeared in such publications as The Nation, The Guardian, Boston Globe, Associated Press, San Francisco Chronicle, Al Jazeera, and more. His journalism focuses on immigration, the drug war, U.S. policy in Latin America, and more. He's been recognized by the Pulitzer Center, and he was the co-founder of Presente.org. Welcome to the program, Roberto.
Hi, Gunali. How are you?
Doing really well. Thanks for joining us. So first, the U.S. has made no secret about supporting regime change in Venezuela. This is slightly different from the past when they've done it more covertly. It's all out in the open now. Mike Pence made his little speech to the people of Venezuela with Spanish subtitles. Why do you think they're so overt about this?
I think there's a history. You have to look at what's happening in Venezuela within a historical concept context, Sonali. Beginning with, let's just start artificially with 2002, because there's a history before that that involves U.S. support for, you know, mass murdering governments and stuff. But let's not even talk about that. Let's talk about from the Chavez era in 1999 to and especially 2002, when you had the first coup attempt against a legitimately elected Venezuelan government. Since 2002, you've had numerous attempts to either stage coups or continually stage destabilization operations that involve everything from sabotaging the economy, supporting those groups you see in all the news reports with tens of millions of dollars in support in what some would call, I think, destabilization welfare money. You have paramilitary operations run out of places like Colombia and supported by people like Alvaro Uribe, the bloodiest, most mass murdering single person in the Americas in our lifetimes right now, who is an advocate, strong advocate and supporter of the destabilization program and Guaido and members of the opposition. The destabilization also includes heavy media, social media operations that used to be covert operations, but they're now overt. So to answer your question directly, what used to be overt is now covert. I actually had a highly placed intelligence, a former intelligence officer in the U.S. government tell me that things that the USAID, the National Endowment for Democracy, and other programs in and outside of the State Department are now doing what the CIA used to do. So when you're witnessing what's happening in Venezuela right now, there's a historical context of destabilization, and there's a history of overt and covert operations.
So let's actually take a look at what Trump said on Tuesday night during his State of the Union address. I want to play the full clip where he talks not just about Venezuela, but about then segues into how socialism seems to be infecting the U.S.
2 weeks ago, the United States officially recognized the legitimate government of Venezuela and its new president, Juan Guaido. We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair. Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not government coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free. Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country.
And that is President Trump on Tuesday night, first talking about Venezuela and then about the fears that he has of socialism in the United States. I want to ask you about both of those issues, Roberto, but let's start with the issue of Venezuela. He equated the failures of the economy to Maduro's socialism. How real is it, or how true is it, that it's somehow Venezuela's socialist policies that have led to the economic problems that country is facing? And those problems are quite real.
Well, I mean, there's different problems. There are definitely problems among the poor, and I think the Maduro government has its share of issues like mismanagement of the economy, an overdependence on oil, and yes, corruption. There's a, you know, I've had sources talk to me about the massive corruption that existed even before Hugo Chavez, by the way. So these are endemic problems that suddenly the U.S. cares about. That said, the other part of the problem, the part that takes us into more dangerous territory, are things like the sanctions that caused Venezuela to use billions in oil money and other economic, I would say, sabotage, because I'm not alone in this. I'm joined, for example, by Mr. Sayas, who is the former UN Special Rapporteur to Venezuela up until 2017. And he called, even in 2017 and before, what the United States was doing, like, quote unquote, likely crime against humanity, a likely crime against humanity. So you're talking about things that we saw during the Allende overthrow, and coup attempt, which was successful, you know,
in Chile,
you know, in 1973, you had economic sabotage. You had the world community concerned about a socialist president. You had internal dissent and militarized dissent. You had media operations conducted more covertly by the CIA, we now know. You have diplomatic initiatives supported by humanitarians like Henry Kissinger, okay? Quote-unquote humanitarians, just in case nobody gets the sarcasm with which I'm speaking about someone whose hands are so bloody with Latin American, Asian, and African blood, it's not even funny. So you have a history of U.S. destabilization, and what we're seeing in Venezuela, as I've documented in one of my stories for Foreign Policy, is nothing less than destabilization for the digital age. And that includes framing Venezuela as a failure of socialism when you say nothing about the, you know, what a UN special rapporteur is calling a likely crime against humanity. You know, because children are and will be dying in Venezuela, elderly people will be lacking medicine, and many other problems will be exacerbated by the strangulation of the Venezuelan economy by the U.S. regime of Donald Trump.
So also would love to get your thoughts on just an aside on the fear-mongering of socialism in the United States. Trump said, we are alarmed by new calls to adopt socialism. America was founded on liberty and independence, not government coercion, dominance, and control. We renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country. And so, of course, all the Republicans stood up and clapped. What do you make of this?
I think I saw some Democrats clap to that too.
Probably.
Which to me speaks to actually something that wasn't a dumb move by Trump. I'll say that. It was pretty rhetorically smart when you look at the way he's using the tropes of the Red Scare that run deep in the psyche of the United States to stir up fear of a socialist takeover by outside forces. And at the same time, it's kind of a bank shot that hits the person that could be the biggest fear that he and the Republicans have, which is actually Bernie Sanders, who is one of the only candidates who's even slightly diverging from the corporate messaging, the corporate policies, the militarism that leads Dick Durbin, Nancy Pelosi, and others who are clueless about Venezuela to come out and talk about Venezuela and Maduro, the evil Maduro, without saying anything about U.S. history, U.S. destabilization programs, U.S. Millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars spent to destabilize and destroy a country. So, you know, the Democrats are here talking about Maduro, but they're not talking about U.S. destabilization programs, covert and overt. They're not talking about economic destabilization. They're not talking about millions of dollars in U.S. funding for right-wing extremist groups in Venezuela that I've gotten to know actually personally by having, for example, a gun pointed in my chest by them. So the Democrats are, you know, using the tried and true trope of the Red Scare, right? Oh, watch out, socialism. So, you know, they're expanding the anti-Russia franchise to include Venezuela, and along the same lines, bring in Bernie Sanders so that the debate is limited within a corporate Republican extremist versus a corporate Democrat, you know, because most of the other candidates, with the exception of Sanders, and perhaps on economics, Warren, toe a strong corporate militarist line. So by red baiting Venezuela, red baiting Bernie Sanders, and red baiting those of us who are not down with the corporate militarist program that is a bipartisan consensus that you can see in Venezuela, Trump is actually shaping the debate in a way that is winnable for him, because he already proved that he could defeat a corporate militarist Democrat like Hillary Clinton.
Roberto, on Wednesday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo posted this hysterical sounding tweet that makes it sound as though we are seeing the beginnings of a manufactured crisis. So essentially, the Maduro government has blocked roads leading out of Venezuela or into Venezuela. And Juan Guaido's interim presidency, his self-declared interim presidency, has arranged for an aid shipment to come in through roads that have been blocked. And Pompeo just tweeted on Wednesday, the Venezuelan people desperately need humanitarian aid. The U.S. and other countries are trying to help, but Venezuela's military, under Maduro's orders, is blocking aid with trucks and shipping tankers. The Maduro regime must, and then he capitalized this next part of the sentence, let the aid reach the starving people. Does this sound like a manufactured crisis moment to you?
It sounds like the continuation of a manufactured crisis, because the last almost 20 years of U.S. policy in Venezuela has been, in fact, a manufactured crisis, right? From the coup that dissolved the entire government and the Constitution to the present, where they dissolved the entire government and the Constitution by a tweet. So we're just seeing modifications on a well-established pattern for the digital age and for digital era consumption. So when you see Pompeo, you know, making these statements, when you see the U.S. starving Venezuela on one hand and then talking about starvation, you're watching, in fact, yes, a manufactured, the kind of manufactured consent I teach my students at UCLA, for example, where you create a problem and then you define the solution or you define the problem in a way that doesn't involve you, when in fact you've been at the center and are the driving force of the problem. The aid program, quote unquote aid, just to help the starving people of Venezuela, I think follows a pattern established under the Clinton administration, where you started seeing this whole thing of humanitarian war for humanitarian reasons, right? War has become unpopular since Vietnam, and the excuses and the framing you create to justify war have taken on these new frames. And so in the case of places like in Africa or in Latin America now, you're seeing, you saw the Obama administration stage several of these, right? There were humanitarian reasons for dropping 26,000 bombs in 1 year on Muslim countries, right? You now have Trump, Pompeo, and the ever hideous and dangerous Elliot Abrams bringing us, teddy bears and food for starving children that they themselves are helping to starve and even kill. When you look at, for example, the paramilitary operations, the bombings, the assassinations, and the barbed wire beheading in one case that I know of a parent I interviewed of people associated or not associated with the Venezuelan government who were killed by this peaceful Venezuelan operation, that is another example of the way you manufacture consent, right? Because in Chomsky's book, you have victims that are legitimate victims, quote unquote, and you have illegitimate victims that you either play down or attack or ignore. So in the case of Venezuela, you know, you touch a hair on any opposition members and the Maduro government has killed people. There's no question. But so has the Venezuelan opposition, which you can even see videotapes on YouTube in which the members of the Venezuelan opposition, like a guy I've researched pretty thoroughly, Laurent Saleh, S-A-L-E-H. Saleh is on camera admitting to plotting bombings, plotting assassinations, plotting killing, and other activities that we would designate under the label of terrorists. In the United States, were they perpetrated here? Were they plotted here? You can also see video of Laurent Saleh now, after he was arrested and released and now exiled to Spain, being a representative, a spokesperson for the opposition, out there talking on panels about quote unquote human rights and terrorism. So when I saw this, you can see it on Twitter. He's there talking about human rights in Venezuela as a victim, when he's also on tape being a perpetrator of terrorist acts. So this is the kind of inversion of reality, the manufactured consent that has reached such extreme levels that, to go back to your previous question, this is what allows the Trump administration to be so nakedly obvious about its demand, its desire for oil, as John Bolton said. Mm-hmm. You know, because the Obama administration, for example, laid the foundation for destabilization that's now inherited by Trump, you have Democrats, you have many in the liberal media, and joining extreme fascists like neo-fascists like Jair Bolsonaro or the dictatorial president of Honduras and other nefarious figures, including Elliot Abrams, in this festival of right-wing extremism.
So, Roberto, finally, the people of Venezuela and their struggles are generally being used by those who support U.S.-backed regime changes in Venezuela as a reason to, you know, bring Juan Guaido into power. As far as you know, what is the sentiment among Venezuelans, whether or not they once backed Maduro or maybe still do, or they've been critical of Maduro but were supporters of Chavez. What is the sentiment inside Venezuela that you can give us a sense of about outside interference in their country?
I've been talking to different people in Venezuela, and I've been doing so since pretty regularly since 2014. And I would be remiss to say that the Venezuelan society is, in fact, not to say that Venezuelan society is, in fact, a divided society. Public opinion is divided pretty straight down the middle, you know, with significant numbers of people opposed to the Maduro administration and still significant numbers supporting the Maduro administration. However, if you look at the court of public opinion that is U.S. media, you would think that it's the people versus Maduro. For example, when you have this last weekend, pretty massive marches on the part of the opposition that's, you know, gotten tens of millions of dollars from the U.S. government to help organize these things. You know, you have the media reporting that, but they didn't report to you that there were massive marches throughout all of Venezuela in support of the Maduro government. So, again, you have this careful curation of the story that I came to know pretty well because I told a story about the mentor of Juan Guaido, Leopoldo López, and I got death threats. And after the death threat, and that included a gun put in my chest, I had a guy named Agent Mike Ranger call me from the U.S. State Department. He was communicating with me about my government's concern, quote unquote, for my well-being after the death threat. Well, the problem was I never reported the death threat to the authorities. Hmm. So Agent Ranger had basically found out about a death threat that I didn't report to the Venezuelan authorities through other means, which had to have been the people that perpetrated it. After I got that death threat, there were attempted lawsuits against the magazines I was writing for to censor my stories. The National Lawyers Guild, you can see this online, the National Lawyers Guild and other legal associations came to the defense of my story and of me before the attempts at censorship by Leopoldo López's lawyers. And I have experienced that tells me when you really try to get at the truth in Venezuela, you face up against some very powerful interests. Mm-hmm. So when we're watching those images, we're watching very powerful interests, bipartisan interests. Because remember, what happened to me happened during the Obama administration, the Obama State Department, probably the Obama CIA that was doing the destabilization programs that they've always done since before Obama. And you're seeing a carefully curated story produced for mass consumption that's making people that are terrorists look like heroes. It's making people that are terrorized by those terrorists invisible because it doesn't feed the story of good opposition versus bad Maduro. Hmm. So you're seeing basically our media become a psychological operation in terms of Venezuela. I would actually say it, and I say that without blinking.
Right. The mainstream media coverage in the West has always been very problematic on Venezuela. It's always been difficult to get accurate information. Well, Roberto, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, helping shed some light on these issues.
Thank you, Sonali.
Roberto Lovato is a writer and journalist. His work has appeared in such publications as The Nation, The Guardian, Boston Globe, Associated Press, San Francisco Chronicle, Al Jazeera, and more. He currently teaches at UCLA. We've been discussing U.S. desires for regime change in Venezuela. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.